So again, once you have cash flow, if it's not the business, but it's kicking off six figures, sell it. Find a buyer, take that cash, and we roll it into something else.
Hey everyone, this is Cliff, and you're listening to the Pursuit of Profit podcast. Welcome back, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. Today we're discussing what our clients are telling us and what's preventing them from purchasing a franchise. From overcoming fear, taking risks, SBA loans, and failure. We hope you enjoy the show, and please follow us as we drop new episodes each week on Wednesdays. All opinions expressed by Cliff, Justin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Phrenosity and Pursuit of Profit. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Pursuit of Profit, Phrenosity, Cliff, Justin, and guests of the podcast may maintain positions in the franchises discussed on this podcast.
What's going on? You got a guest for us today? What do we got?
No guest today. We said the other day we should record our phone conversations because there's no camera running. It's just unfiltered. And some of those conversations are fantastic, right?
We have conversations around what's happening with our clients, things exactly. that our clients are dealing with through this process. We talk about this and say, man, there's probably a lot of people out there going through these same issues, having these same questions and concerns. We should record these conversations and exactly. people could benefit from how we're managing people through these different things in the process here.
You're exactly right. And a lot of the issues that we deal with, we take for granted. And a lot of the knowledge that you have about this business, you also take for granted. And you don't realize that some of the knowledge you have is just critically important to a prospective buyer. And it's mind-changing for them. Something just basic that you would say, something as basic as discussing an exit strategy. They're like, oh my God. That's unbelievable. And you're like, that's pretty basic, right? It's not basic to the average person that has not gone through an exit. It's not basic for an average person who has never been self-employed before. It's not basic at all. It's eye-opening. It's very thought-provoking. And that knowledge is power. And what we're trying to do on the show is to try and really share, right, our intellectual property with people and make them better at navigating this process. Some of our knowledge actually talks people out of business. I tell people that all the time. A lot of the things that I say with you as a client throughout the life of this relationship, I will literally talk you out of doing this. And they find that odd. It's like, yeah, I'm going to be straight up with you. I'm going to give you the facts. So at the end of the process, you can make a business decision. Many people will not buy a business. They don't have the intestinal fortitude. They don't believe in themselves. They won't do it. And then, of course, there's a whole list of other things that we talked about that are kind of new to me, right? That you were bringing up what you're experiencing with some of your clients. And we should talk about them today, right? Like that client that I introduced you to, that woman, she was like 70. And I had a really long chat with her. And it's like, look, I couldn't tell. And I would never be good at age and weight ever. Because I'm like, how old are you? And she goes,
I'm 11.
And she said, no, she goes, She goes, I'm 70. I go, wow, you're 70. And you want to become self-employed at this phase of life. Absolutely. I'm in mental health. I hate it. I want to get out of it. My kids are in it. And I said, listen, what's your net worth? And she gave me a number. It was maybe just slightly north of $500,000. I said, please listen to me. She's speaking to all these brands, Justin, all these brick and mortar brands. And I said, you need to look at non-brick and mortar brands. Do not look at anything that's brick and mortar, that requires build out, that requires a long-term lease, that's gonna probably be a nosebleed monthly lease payment on your unit, lots of employees, probably a year to bleed before you break even. I go, you will never recover if you lose. You'll never recover. And go ahead. And now you're telling me what? So you now have her.
Well, right. So you have the initial call and then she fills out some information for us and I'm on the follow-up phone call. and we're talking about her goals. And the one thing that she says to me is, like, my big takeaway from my conversation with Cliff is no brick and mortar.
That's right.
I don't even know if she really understood why. I don't know if she really cared. Like, that is like a hard and fast rule. Right. No brick and mortar. And she's mentioned this to me now on several phone calls that we've had as she's progressing through the process here. She's like, I just have Cliff in the back of my head saying, no brick and mortar, no brick and mortar. And she's struggling with it because there are brick and mortar brands that she likes. The first thing I would recommend to anyone who's dealing with this is the big issue here. Well, there's two things that you mentioned. One of them is age. Our tolerance for risk changes as we approach the retirement years. This particular client happens to be in those retirement years, which means that there's zero time to recover should something go wrong in the business, right? So,
that's right.
So like, how do you anti-fragile your life? If there's an 80 to 90% chance of success in this business, what is the plan for that unpredictable 10 to 20%?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
This is what we need to think about. And a lot of people don't even think about it. A lot of people don't think about the exit strategy. Nobody wants to talk about it in franchising. Nobody wants to talk about failure.
You raise an interesting point. But if you go back, how did a 7-year-old get on the internet clicking on brands and end up with us? And the answer is simple. Because unfortunately, when she was 20, 30, 40, and 50, they did not plan properly for the day they turned 70 and want to retire. They don't have any money. They don't have a pension. They didn't build a retirement account. They did not invest properly to retire on time with an unfettered lifestyle. And that brings older people, they're being forced into this conversation, literally, because she's trying to build an annuity for retirement. That's really what she's saying. I cannot stop working. And by the way, I hate what I'm currently doing, which was mental health. So it's like, you look at some of that, like the problem number one is not just you should look at brick and mortar, non-brick and mortar. First problem is you're 70 and you're speaking to me about trying to create an income stream in retirement. That's problem number one. And that's a separate episode. But now we're here. Okay, you didn't plan properly. Now you're on the phone with me and you see what's happening. It pushes their risk tolerance, right? It pushes them. It's like, I hear you, I get it, but I don't have a choice. I need 80 grand a year for the next, until I'm 80.
She doesn't have a choice, but she doesn't have a choice that she needs to make more money. She does. She's never going to retire. But she does have options to mitigate her risk, right? So the first thing I would have recommended, that's exactly where I was going, is start earlier in life, because it's really hard to take a risk, even small calculated risks, as you approach retirement. She is motivated, though. She has a young energy. She wants to do something. She's someone that doesn't want to just sit around and do nothing in retirement, which is great. The problem then was, okay, out of all the franchises to look at in our retirement years with a $500,000 net worth, should we be looking at a restaurant franchise? I view a restaurant franchise as, speaking in broad strokes here, some of the most risky businesses to be involved in. They're the largest investment brands. They're brick and mortar. You have a ton of equipment. You have a lot of employees. You have a lot of complexity. And anytime you're doing something in brick and mortar, you add additional layers of risk. There's no doubt. So when thinking about an exit strategy, it's way easier to get out of a non-brick and mortar brand than it is to get out of a brick and mortar brand, for a few reasons. First of all, in brick and mortar, it's a bigger investment. So you're definitely going to be taking on some debt. I know very few people who are plopping down $400,000, $500,000, $600,000 cash for a brick and mortar brand.
That's right. She's
taking on debt. The total project cost is equivalent to her entire net worth. So not only is she taking on a large loan, she's also going to have to sign a lease for a fairly large space. She's probably going to have to personally guarantee that lease at least for several years. And again, the goal is the business works well, but if it doesn't, she has a huge liability and she's probably considering filing for bankruptcy in her retirement years.
That's right.
And that was your hard and fast rule. There's no way you could do this.
That's right.
So she's now looking at a lot of the things that everyone else is looking at. We're showing her an incredible non-brick and mortar home services brand, $100,000 investment with a earnings claim, people doing seven figures, huge margins, look, 1 to 2 employees, a subcontractor model. And she's actually looking at another brick and mortar brand that she loves. That's a very small footprint. Again, 2 employees, very small space. So she's dealing with this now, more passionate about these brick and mortar brands, but she also has you in the back of her head saying,
"Good,
be careful," which is excellent.
Good.
Ultimately, it's going to be her decision, right? It's our job to that she understands what the risks are and how she can mitigate those risks. Ultimately, it's then up to her.
One of the when I jump on the phone sometimes, and I want to quickly just assess, right, the situation. And I want the listeners to think about this too. When we jump on the phone, it's like, I want to buy a franchise. And it's just like, okay, great. Just tell me, because I view prognosis before diagnosis malpractice. So number one, I don't even know that you belong in business. So let's shelve your entrepreneurial dream for a second. How old are you? What phase of life are you in? I'm X years old. Great. And I have 2 young kids at home. That is very different from I'm 70. And I'm an empty nester. Those are 2 totally different people, right? So it's like married, single, 2 kids, 40 years old, versus I have a dual income. My spouse makes great money, 6 figures. And I always ask, does your spouse's income cover the global expenses of your life? Yes. Yes. We usually use my money and we put it in a savings account. I do work. I make X, but my spouse really covers our living. Fantastic.
That changes things.
Now, it changes everything. And everyone listening to this needs to do this same exercise. What is your risk tolerance, right? What's your risk proclivity? What is going on in your life as it relates to risk? Oh, I don't like taking chances. I don't like this. I don't like that. It's like, okay, we need to discuss your risk tolerance and really understand in a more granular way, is this right for you? And are you going to be happy doing it? And are you willing to stick it out? Remember that guy we sold the franchise to? He owned it for what, 6-8 months? And he called up the franchisor and said, I didn't realize it was going to be this much work, and wanted to close it. It's like, man, like, how did you even get involved in this? Like, how did that even happen?
So there's a few things here. One, in a zero interest rate environment, I understand a lot of people wanting to go into brick and mortar brands. That's cheap. People are taking on SBA loans like crazy. Over the past couple of years, real estate costs are up, construction project costs are up, equipment costs are up. So the project cost for these brands has gone way higher. And on top of that, last I checked, SBA loans were 11.25. So debt's gotten expensive. If you're operating in a slim margin business, a lot of food brands are slimmer margin businesses, that debt is going to affect cash flow. Can the business service the debt, right? I spoke to a guy yesterday. I wrote this down. He recently bought 37 Popeyes, 5 Burger Kings, and 5 Arby's. They're operators. And they're diving into these things to try to turn them around because they're all struggling. His cost of goods sold, his food and labor costs, and I checked this. I said, this can't be right. His food and labor costs are 90%.
No, he's got to fail.
Now, he said, you know, there's a lot of labor. We have too many regional managers, right? We're trying to, you know, run more efficiently and lean things out. These businesses can only charge so much for a burger or a piece of chicken. Debt's gotten expensive. So you got to give me a really good reason why you should get involved in some of these brick and mortar brands that are operating on slim margins, when you can get involved in a home services brand where the margins are huge and you don't have to take on a loan. The reason, there's several
totally
reasons,
agree.
But that's a big reason why so many people are getting involved in home services and non-brick and mortar. I mean, you have to consider things like the macro economy and what's happening out there. It plays a role in how the businesses will perform.
It's so true. When we do a review, and I wanted to touch on that about SBA and risk tolerance and phase of life, I'm going to say something that no broker ever tells our client, ever. There is no exit strategy for an SBA loan, period. No one ever talks about it. No one wants to talk about it. Everyone makes it look like bankruptcy is an option. There is no bankruptcy. There is no exit from paying an SBA loan. The federal government is guaranteeing.
They're getting the money.
That's right. The federal government and I'll use an example of Bank of America. Bank of America gives you an SBA loan, you fail. You file for bankruptcy. You can file for bankruptcy for just about everything else with exception to that SBA loan. You will pay that loan back. And this is why we tell people, be very, very careful how much debt you bring on, regardless of interest rates. But if you're going to get an SBA loan, to Justin's point, in a marginal business where your net is in the, let's say, teens, low teens, chances of failure are just exacerbated.
Exacerbated, yeah.
And, yeah, and I'm not interested in any businesses like that. I don't like single-digit net, and I don't like nets in the teens unless the business is just really, really solid. And you're right. Another note to the audience is 4 years ago, we were able to do construction on a 1,000 to 1,500 square foot retail space for about under $100,000. Today, we're seeing $200,000. Think about that. Think about the businesses that we're doing. Look at Crack Boba. Look at Island Fin. Just look at our own personal experiences with some of these construction jobs and the bids that they're getting. I mean, they're $100,000 more than they were paying in the past. So you're 100% right. If you felt this way about brick and mortar brands in the past, multiply a lot of this stuff by two. Super dangerous. I know we need to move off this topic, but be very, very careful.
It skews ROI, right? So again, different things may be important to different people. Everyone cares about ROI. We're investors, right? Where can I get the best return on my investment? If your total project cost is up 30%, the AUV has to go up 30%. Otherwise, your ROI is skewed. And right now, a lot of brands are not growing at that rate. So the economy is slowing a little bit, and the project costs have gone up. They've come down a little bit, but really not much. You made a comment before about whether or not someone should be self-employed. And I think this is an interesting topic to talk about because, you know, while we're starting to see some layoffs right now, I'm starting to talk to some IT people, there's some tech layoffs right now where people are unable to find jobs. We haven't heard this in years, right? So we're starting to see people who are saying, man, been interviewing for a couple of months. It's tough out there right now. I'm considering business ownership. But we still have a lot of our clients who are still employed, right? And we've talked about this so many times on the pod where, you know, should you be self-employed? Are you willing to leave the job or not? Right? If you don't leave the job, who is running the business? Right? Like, this is the kind of like, I don't think a lot of people think about that enough, right? If you're not operating the business, who is the operator? Because if we're going to hire a $30,000 to $40,000 a year manager to run this, we just had a baby, to raise this child for us, there's a risk there. And I think a lot of people view risk mitigation as keeping the job and allowing someone else to run the business for them. I don't know if you agree with that. I think in many cases, like if we want to be self-employed, cut the cord, leave the job and dive in full time, because there's some other 30-year-old guy out there grinding it out, all in on his business, competing against you, working 90 hours a week to put you out of business.
That's right.
And you just hired a $30,000 a year employee that doesn't give a shit about your job or your child the way you do. Who's going to raise your child the way you would?
And I totally agree.
Do you actually want to be self-employed? Or do you just want the benefits of being a business owner without being willing to actually make the commitment?
I believe that that's a topic on its own, because that there's a lot there. I mean, people are now viewing franchising as just another asset class. They've already bought the Airbnb. Now they're watching what's happening there, right? They own the stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. They're like, man, this thing's an all-time high. Does it keep going? And they're creeping into franchising and treating it like an asset class. And they actually believe, like many asset classes, that it is passive. It's not. It's not passive. You can't just keep your career, hire a kid to run your $400,000 business. And they think they're managing risk. Well, I'm going to keep my job. That's how I manage risk. You're not managing risk by keeping your job and hiring someone that could care less about your company after you just invested $1,000. I just don't understand it. And these stories rarely play out well. I had a guy recently do this to me. And he's like, yeah, man, I'm going to buy this business and I'm going to keep my job. I'm going to be fully passive. I'm like, wait, time out. How much bandwidth do you have in your schedule? He's like, none. I go, so you have no bandwidth. You can't give me 20 hours a week collectively to oversee this new business. He's like, no, 20 hours a week. He's like, no way. I go, do you work from home? No, I go into the office. I commute. I travel a lot. I said, I am so uncomfortable doing this with you. I think you'd be better served with someone else. He's like, and you know what his response was? And I'm always fascinated with this part. It's like, wow, you're actually trying to help me. You're willing to lose me as a client to do the right thing. You know what he says to me?
He gets upset with you.
Yeah, he got upset. He got upset with me. Instead of saying, holy crap, you're the first person to actually tell me the truth and say, you are not a fit for doing this. You are probably going to fail and I don't want that on my watch. Instead, he goes, you know, like there's a lot of you out there. Like there's plenty of people I could be working with. It's as if he's going to run around and make phone calls until someone agrees with his asinine investment idea. And I go, there's plenty of people that will take your money. There's plenty of people that have commission breath that will do this deal with you. I go, I'm just telling you, you are probably going to fail.
There's a psychological aspect to, if I'm hiring a salesperson, I want to hire someone who just had twins, just bought a $2 million house and a huge car. I need
fire
someone
in the belly
who has to go out and sell.
Hunt and kill.
Yeah. Hunt and kill and drag something back to the den every night to feed their family.
That's right.
Exactly. You know, you think about even the brands, businesses that had been around forever. I mean, Sears ruled the world at one point. IBM ruled the world at one point. They let their guard down. It can go away like that.
Like that.
Right? Yep. Even look at NVIDIA. The leadership team at NVIDIA says, we always feel like we're 30 days from going out of business. Microsoft is trying, you know, Intel, AMD, they're trying to put us out of business. We have to fight to win every day. This is a competition.
Totally.
Leave the job and you will get out of bed early every day with a plan to go make money and be successful in your business. You will, because you have no option. You can't fail.
When I got involved in being a stockbroker with Salomon Smith Barney, the first thing they asked is, what car do you drive? What's the payment? What do you own? How much is rent? How much is your mortgage?
How badly do you need this?
They want, Wall Street wants their brokers fully leveraged at all times. They want you moving money. That's their game. I move a little bit here so I could put a little bit right in my pocket. Move a little bit over there, put a little bit more in my pocket. First thing they told me was get a new car, get a bigger payment, buy expensive suits. It's the same shit.
Increased cost of living.
You're absolutely right.
Yep.
Exactly. You know, terrible advice, but I agree with you on hiring hungry.
So yeah, that's an interesting topic. So this was a client that I've been working with for months now. And we went through the holidays. He's been kind of quiet. And I wasn't sure if it was just the holidays and busy and distracted, or if he's dealing with fear or concerns, but something wasn't right. So I get on the phone with him the other day and he's like, hey man, he's like, listen, I like the brand a lot. He's looking at another low investment, non-brick and mortar home services brand. He has plenty of money. And the guy had super sharp, has skills. He would be just a phenomenal franchise owner. So I said, hey, what's up? He said, so I'm struggling with, I don't know if this is the right business long-term, is what he said. And I'm like, that's interesting. What do you mean by that? So, and what he meant was like, I have a plan, right? I have a 10 to 15 year goal leading to retirement. I know how much money I need to make over the next 15 years to get to my retirement number. And I don't know if this is the business that's going to get there. And I'm signing this 10 year franchise agreement. So like, what are my options? So the first thing I said to him was, you know, why does it have to be? Like, why does it have to be the business long-term? So he's working on his pro forma and, you know, you can only predict so much. Ultimately, we don't know how the business is going to play out. The beauty of franchising is we have the opportunity to validate and speak to franchise owners who are in similar markets, who have similar skills and maybe similar goals, to see how the business is performing. But ultimately, we don't know how his market is going to respond to the business, right? Can this market get me this many jobs per day so I could get to this number that I need to make in this business? Otherwise, it's just not worth it for me. And again, if we were looking at a brick and mortar brand, it's got to be the brand, right? Because if it doesn't, it's a little bit harder to get out of that. So what we talked about was, the good thing with this brand was it is a low investment. He wouldn't have to take on any debt. He may take on debt, but he doesn't have to, right? So it's, if the business isn't the right business, or if it doesn't even get too profitable, he can get out of it. Sell the assets. He has a write-off. He'll move on with his life relatively unscathed, okay? What we also talked about was, like, the number one goal is to find a business that's easy to get to cash flow positive. When you have cash flow, right? So again, this is low investment, low overhead business, huge profit margins. You really don't need a lot of jobs to get to cash flow positive. He'll know within the first couple of months whether he's going to get to cash flow positive or not, right? Once you have cash flow, once you have profits in the business, now you have options, right? Maybe it is the business long-term that can get to his number. This thing is really ramping up. I want to go all in and scale this thing. Great, right? Now we know it's the business. Maybe it is a good business kicking off $100,000 a year, but that's about all it's going to be. It's not going to get him to $300,000 a year, but he likes the business. All right, hold on to it. Put some management in place, put some systems in place. You call me back and say, what else is working out there? I want to layer something on top of this. This business is fine, but it's not going to get me to where I want to be. Let's add on some other businesses. Totally have that option once you have cash flow. Or he could sell the business. With cash flow, you have something that someone else is willing to pay for. And what I explained to him was, like, sometimes people see these 10-year franchise agreements and it's like, man, I've never had a job for 10 years. I haven't even been married for, like, how many things have people actually committed to for 10 years nowadays? Like, no one lives in the same house for 10 years anymore. People bounce around, job hopping, house hopping, spouse hopping, right? It's like people don't commit to things long-term like that anymore. And you and I are the same way with our business. So I explained to him, I've signed how many? 5, 6, 7 franchise agreements. I've never owned a franchise for the full term of the franchise agreement.
Right.
The shortest amount of time you and I have owned a franchise is less than a year. I want to say we owned one for like 6 to 8 months. And he's like, really?
That was a turnaround. We flipped it.
Yeah. It was a turnaround. We got into a business that was struggling, took it off of someone's hands, turned it around quickly, got it to an annual run rate of $100,000. Someone in the area lost a job, had to replace their income, and they were willing to pay us a 3x multiple of EBITDA. We got out of it, right?
Boom.
And that's fine. So again, once you have cash flow, if it's not the business, but it's kicking off 6 figures, sell it, find a buyer, take that cash, and we roll it into something else. So you have so many options once you have cash flow. And I think he's being smart. You know, this is his first business, never owned a business before, never owned a franchise. And we agreed, this is the right business. We don't know if it's going to be the business, but it's the right business to get started, get something cash flowing, and then we could determine in a year or two how this is going to play out and what we want to do with it.
It's an interesting issue. And it comes up a lot. And I think people listening are going to say, I didn't know that. I didn't know that, right? I didn't know that. It's, they believe that number one, I've never invested in anything that I thought was forever, ever. Name one thing you invest in, you're like, holy crap, this is marriage, man. I'm buying gold. That's marriage. I'm buying an ETF. I'm buying a mutual fund. I'm buying a piece of real estate. I'm investing in a business. I have never approached an investment in my life where I felt that this is permanent, that this is it, ever. Not one thing. I can't even think of one thing. The only thing would be like marriage that I thought this is a commitment. Marriage was the only time in my life I put myself in check and said, like, this is forever. But investments, I live by, I reserve the right to change my mind. If I like the fundamentals of something, I will buy it. Those fundamentals change, I'm going to sell it. That's why I like to buy things with liquidity. I have never, and I hear what you're saying and I get it. The client is struggling with making a buying decision because the contract feels and looks like marriage. It seems too permanent. And what they don't understand is that you have liquidity. And of course, we recommend brands that have proven liquidity. We work with companies and franchisors that have proven to have liquidity. You can see it in the FDD. It says transfers. Transfers is liquidity. It's one seller and one buyer. It's a two-sided market, right? They don't understand exit strategy. So this is actually really good for people to understand that, number one, you want a long-term contract. Why? Okay, well, what if you do this for 8 years and you decide to sell the franchise? How many years are remaining? If you have a 10-year contract and you're in business for 8 years, how many years remaining? Two, who in the hell is buying a business with 2 years remaining on your contract? The answer is no one. No one. No one's buying your business with 2 years remaining on your lease, and no one is buying your business with 2 years remaining on your franchise agreement. What people need to understand is that when you buy a franchise and you have 10 years and you lived through eight of them, your buyer is getting a full 10-year term. That is a beautiful thing. I will tell you, most people do not understand that. It's like, I thought I was selling on my contract. Franchise agreements are not kind of assignable, assumable, right? You're signing a current then, 8 years in the future, 9 years in the future franchise agreement. That's why you have liquidity. So your buyer is going, no way, man, I'm getting a full 10-year term. Yes. What about the lease? Thankfully, this is another important thing to mention to our listeners. Your lease must mirror your franchise agreement. The SBA won't even let you do the deal without it. A lot of people don't realize that either, that the Small Business Administration makes sure that your lease term on your real estate mirrors the term of your franchise agreement. You have a 20-year term, you need a 20-year lease, right? 10-year term, 10-year lease. A 10-year with a 10-year option, 10-year lease, 10-year option. And the option is yours, not the landlord's. This is so, when you start to explain this to someone like your client that's struggling, they're like, dude, you just made me way more comfortable. I got a 10-year term. I got a 10-year lease. I have a 10-year option. I have a 10-year op. You are so right, Justin. I have liquidity. I'm protected with term. I'm protected in my contract options. And then you know what they do? They flip and go, you think they'll give me a 20-year term? Now you get it. Now you get it, right?
Standard term is 10 years, right? Most franchise agreements, we see 10. Occasionally, we'll see a 5 or a 20. You want to speak to like your preference? I mean, we sold a brand that was, I want to say 20. Typically, we'll find brands that shorten the term. It's because when you have that turnover, every time an agreement turns over, the franchisor can true up the system, right?
Right on.
Upon renewal, we have to bring on the current systems, right? Get people out of the defaults and things like that. So they like that turnover so they can continue getting people up to current with
that's exactly, you
know,
brand
look and feel, whatever that is, right? So that can get expensive for franchisees, right? So there's actually benefits to having a longer term agreement, I think, for the franchise owner. Knowing that if you're signing a 20, you don't have to stay for the full 20. You are an independently owned and operated business, doing business as whatever franchisor you're a part of, and you reserve the right to sell that business at any time. Franchisor has to approve the sale, the transfer. They can't unreasonably withhold that transaction, right? Franchisor wants people to sell their businesses, right? They want to brag about successful exits in their system. That's how they sell more franchises, right? So it's all good. I mean, this is business, right? We buy businesses, we build, we grow, and we exit. That's how we create wealth in business, right? That's the thing that a job will never give us. Jobs are great. They provide cash flow. They pay the bills. They put the kids through college. All good. They don't create wealth because you don't have any leverage. There's no equity, right? And a lot of people don't think about that, right? They think people who are leaving corporate America are so accustomed to a paycheck, and they compare paycheck to cash flow without factoring in that equity, right? We build businesses to sell them. And you and I have never been afraid to sell. We do not get emotionally attached to our businesses.
No, I enjoy the building, selling, and I like the cashing in. Like, the cash flow is nice. Those little checks that come in the mail are very nice. But I do like the payday when you're selling at a, as you said, a 3-4 time multiple on EBITDA and then rebuilding. I like the building phase, the buying the building. I think it's more exciting than the operational phase and buy hold. We've never really been buy hold, but whatever. That's not about us, right? It's about their investment objectives. What are your investment objectives? I want to buy it. I'm 50. I want to do this for 10 years and I want to retire at 60 and sell it or create a legacy for my children, grandchildren. Fantastic. Your investment objectives are different from mine. We're at different phases of life, right? Different net worths, different everything. That's fine. Let's go over to the other thing you said the other day, which was, and a lot of clients do ask this question, you know, what are the mechanics if I fail? Like, what happens if I fail?
Yeah, so, right. Again, this depends on the type of the business that we're getting involved in. When you say, like, what happens if I fail? What happens if this doesn't work out for me? What happens if I never get this thing cash flowing?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot there, right? You have your franchise agreement. You potentially have a lease on real estate. You potentially have a lease on vehicles or a lease on equipment. I mean, you may have a lien on your house.
Yep.
Like, there's a lot there. And this is where the wheels come off, you know, some people's dreams of ownership, because they go negative and all they do is obsess over failing instead of obsessing over being successful.
I have a guy I spoke to call me a couple of months ago and said, hey, he's like, you probably don't remember me. We spoke about 2-3 years ago, had a conversation or two, and he said, I didn't end up working with you. I went out on my own and bought a tea brand. So great, you know, congrats, how's it going? I said, well, that's why I'm calling you. He goes, I know we didn't work together. This is not, you know, your responsibility, but I'm in a bad position here and I need some help. And I said, all right, you know, like, let's go through, like, what did you do? How much did you invest? $700,000+.
Ugh.
How big is the space? It's 4,000 square feet. It's massive, right? And he's like, this is, you know, the franchisor was just young. They didn't understand going into a small footprint, optimizing revenue per square foot. Everything was just way too big. And he's like, I'm so far away from cash flow, from getting out of the red. It's just not going to happen. My overhead is just way too high. I said, what's your burn rate? He's losing about $20,000 a month. And he wants to know, what are his options? Took a huge SBA loan, probably has over $500,000 in debt. Personally guaranteed the lease. And, you know, I asked him what his net worth was, like 1 to 2 million. You don't have a lot of options at that point, yeah, unfortunately, right? And this is where, if it's going, you know, people get so emotionally attracted to these brick and mortar, these sexy brick and mortar concepts, right? Without thinking about, well, what happens if this doesn't work out, right? What is the plan for that unpredictable 10 to 20%? There are not a lot of options in that scenario. Brick and mortar,
that's right.
You just said there's not a lot of options with the SBA loan. You're going to call the landlord, hopefully, right? The whole thing with the lease is not how we get out of the lease. It's getting into the lease. What did we do on the way in?
That's right. Right. And that's where we add a lot of value.
Because once you sign that lease, if you have a straight 10-year personal guarantee, which a lot of landlords are asking for nowadays, you don't have options. You just personally guaranteed that lease for 10 years. If you decide that you want out in year two, you have to either transfer that lease, but who's going to want to take on a lease of a failing business, or you're paying for 8 years worth of rent. Hopefully there's some sort of a good guy clause or something where in the lease that says, hey, if you can rent it to someone else, you know, that person will take over the lease and then I'm now removed from the lease. But, you know, the lease in a brick and mortar brand is all about what you're signing on the way in and not so much about how you get out of it, because there's just not a lot of options if you sign a bad lease.
You're 100% right. A lot of people don't realize where they always talk about the brand, the brand, the brand, the brand, the brand. It's not the brand that's going to put the final nail in your coffin. A brand is not, you already bought the brand. That money's spent. What is going to kick you when you're down and force you to bankruptcy is the shit lease you signed because you did not want to be disciplined. We provide our clients with a 24-point mandate when it comes to negotiating commercial leases to avoid these exact issues that you're talking about. Risk mitigation strategies. There are risks in everything. Becoming wealthy is knowing how to mitigate, manage these risks. And one of the biggest risks in self-employment is not the brand you chose. It's everything else that you've done. How much debt you were involved in and how you, what lease you took over. And you're exactly right. Quiznos did this. When Quiznos first came out, I walked in there and I'm like, you could drive a Mack truck through here. You don't need more than 900, 1100 square feet for a Quiznos. Those locations were 2,500,000 square feet. That was one of their many problems, was just having no site selection discipline, right? So when you talk about what happens if I fail, well, the first thing that people need to understand is, and people love to obsess over failure, the IFA did a trailing three-year failure rate and concluded 17%. So people love to tell me I have a 17% failure rate. I flip the script and say, no, you have an 83% success rate, right? I'm way more interested in that number. 83% success rate. Well, then how are so many people failing? I'm going to give you an example right now. Do you remember the guy in Miami that bought a brick and mortar food franchise that you and I visited personally for a grand opening and there was no one there?
Yes.
And you and I asked him, why is there no one here? And we said, did you do and implement the grand opening investment? No. And he responded with, this area is different. It's different? How is it different?
Kiss of death and franchising.
Yeah, exactly. We knew at that moment that this guy is out of business. And we told him, you have just shown us that you have a high probability of failing. You all, at grand opening, you're already deviating from the business model. You have an 83% success rate according to the IFA, and you couldn't execute a grand opening, and he failed, right? The other thing that I've learned over 20 years of doing this is, you know, like an early warning system, right? Like the hurricane, right? I get to log in and I get to see a storm sitting off of Africa. I've got a lot of time, man. I do. I have a lot of time. Tornadoes, not so much, but there are early warning detections for a lot of things. What I'm fascinated by is that in franchising and business, people tell you that they're failing and they give you like 2 weeks to help them. It's like, how much runway do you have? Not much. How much cash do you have left? None. How much longer can you pay the landlord? Maybe another month. I'm amazed at how many people don't come to us earlier and their life would be very different.
Right. Well, one thing is, have you asked the franchisor for help? We were on with Alan last week, right, at Art of Drawers, the founder of Art of Drawers. And he was talking about how many franchisees pay a royalty and don't really reach out to ask for help.
That's right.
If you're struggling, the franchisor, trust me, they want you to be successful just as much as you want to be successful. Trust me. They want to help you. They need you to be successful. You got to ask for help. Unfortunately, I feel like a lot of people think that if it's not working out, you know, I'm going to keep investing. And then once I'm like 30 days from running out of cash, I'll just try to sell it. It doesn't happen that way, especially if the business is not really saleable. It's going to take some time to find a buyer who's willing to take this on to try to turn it around. That's not easy.
That's exactly right.
You and I have had only one scenario where, I don't know that we call it a failure, it was a business that just wasn't working for us. We weren't enjoying operating the business. And we knew after spending a few years in the business that it wasn't the one. It wasn't the one that was going to get us where we wanted it to be, right? It wasn't what we thought it was. It was a young brand.
That's right.
And it just wasn't playing out the way we expected it to. It was a non-brick and mortar brand. What did we do? We had some equipment. We had some employees that had accounts. We sold the equipment. We sold the accounts to the employees.
That's right.
We had a little tax write-off that year. We had an incredible learning experience that we talk about all the time, what we learned from that experience. And we moved on with our lives.
That's right. That's right. Instead of selling the business to one person, we sold the business in pieces to like a dozen people.
We so sold like off accounts. We sold off books of business.
Exactly. And yes, that was our exit and we got out of it. And I hated it. It was one of the worst businesses.
It just wasn't the right business for us. And we learned that was, but again, it wasn't like, oh my God, well, we committed to this thing and we're miserable in this business and we're not making as much money as we need to make, but this is it. We're doing this for the next 10 years, Cliff. We signed this contract. No, we tried it. It wasn't working. Cut our losses, get out, move on. What's the next business?
That's right. Dust ourselves off. That business doesn't suck. Franchising doesn't suck. The world doesn't suck. No, you suck. Right? It wasn't for us. That business is successful in the hands of other people. We were not the right operators for it.
Yep. We sucked in that business.
We did. I mean, we take full accountability. It's not for me. Move on.
And we did.
And we do other things. Exactly.
We did. So
failure will happen. Failure will happen.
Yeah.
People need to cut their losses. They need to leverage the franchisor, leverage the franchisees around them. They need to do some financial engineering, which might include getting assets out of their name. They need to speak to their landlord early. It's like, listen, I'm struggling. I want you to keep this unit in mind. Why is that important? If the landlord is aware that you're paying rent as agreed, but you're willing to turn it, they will actually try and find you a tenant and get you out of that lease.
We could do a whole episode on what to look for when signing a lease. Because it is the greatest liability and risk that a lot of people just don't think about. They all think about the brand.
Site selection, lease negotiation is 100% one episode. People don't realize the art and science that goes into site selection.
Agreed. Well, this was good. Hopefully there's some takeaways here for people and people have considered some of these things or maybe dealing with some of this, and hopefully there's some value here.
Absolutely.
All right, man. Good chatting with you. We'll talk next week.
All right. Take care. Bye.